This is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back. It's Todd Zwillick with you today. President Trump is back from his G20 meeting in Germany. And his final message before leaving, despite election interference, it's time to move forward in working constructively with Russia. The president says he raised it in a more than two-hour meeting with Vladimir Putin. Vladimir Putin denied election interference, and then Putin told reporters the president accepted that denial. What is U.S. policy toward Russia now? President Trump said it's time to move on, and that he and Vladimir Putin talked about what the president called an impenetrable cybersecurity unit so that election hacking and many other negative things will be guarded. And then the reaction to that came from all over Washington. Inviting Russia to cooperate on cybersecurity was like cooperating with ISIS on counterterrorism, like cooperating with a fox on henhouse security. Senator Marco Rubio of Florida said it was like forming an anti-chemical weapons unit with Assad's Syria. And Lindsey Graham went on Meet the Press.
It's not the dumbest idea I've ever heard, but it's pretty close. He gave a really good speech in Poland, President Trump did, and he had what I think is a disastrous meeting with President Putin. 2 hours and 15 minutes of meetings. Tillerson and Trump are ready to forgive and forget when it comes to cyber attacks on the American election of 2016.
By last night, the president seems to have gotten the message. He said on Twitter, "The fact that President Putin and I discussed cybersecurity unit doesn't mean I think it can happen. It can't. But a ceasefire can and did." We're going to talk about the president's meeting with Vladimir Putin, what he might have gotten out of the Russians, and also about this apparent ceasefire in Syria that the president's talking about. Will Pomerantz is deputy director of the Kennan Institute for Advanced Russian Studies at the Wilson Center in Washington, D.C. from 1992 to 1999. He served as program officer for Russia at the National Endowment for Democracy. Will, welcome to The Takeaway.
My pleasure to be here.
President Trump says he did not discuss sanctions with Vladimir Putin. The Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, says they did discuss it. It's a little bit bewildering. But what did we learn about the U.S.-Russia relationship after this meeting between the two leaders?
Well, let's focus on that issue of sanctions first, because Secretary of State Tillerson has now emphasized after the meeting that there will be no change in the U.S. sanctions policy until there is some resolution of the situation in Ukraine. So it's unclear to what extent Putin objected to the sanctions. He always does. He has done so virtually everywhere he's gone around the world. But it appears that the U.S. at least is going to keep its current sanctions regime in place.
That being the case on sanctions, what does the Trump administration's current position on Russian meddling in the 2016 election seem to be?
Well, again, we can rely on President Trump's words the day before his meeting with President Putin, where he said it might be Russia, but it could have been someone else as well. So I think from the President Trump's perspective, he is continuing to try to portray that it may have been Russia, but it was not exclusively Russia. And obviously that has political consequences back home, because Congress, as your statements highlighted, wants to still address this question of Russian interference in the U.S. elections, and they're not willing to forgive and forget, and they're not willing to move forward without actually understanding what Russia did and imposing some sort of penalty on Russia to make sure that it doesn't happen again. So for Donald Trump and his Russia policy, it is clearly constrained by domestic political considerations, because whereas he wants to move forward, it appears that Congress, and there's still an investigation out there as well, does not necessarily want to move forward.
Right. And hovering behind all of this, of course, you mentioned the investigations into Russian meddling in the U.S. election, possible collusion investigations both in Congress and from the Justice Department with the special counsel. News over the weekend, Will Pomerantz, that the son of President Trump, Donald Trump Jr., now acknowledges that he met with a Russian lawyer during the campaign and met with that lawyer on the promise that that person had damaging information about Hillary Clinton. At first, this meeting was not disclosed. Apparently, Jared Kushner was there, the campaign manager. Paul Manafort was there. Put this news in the context of what we already know about interactions between the Trump campaign and Russians.
It just shows that despite all their denials, there seems to be this steady stream of meetings. And in this particular case, it appears to have been a meeting to find out various dirt about the Clinton campaign and potential Russian support of the Clinton campaign. So what I think it emphasizes is that a whole variety of people associated with the Trump campaign and family consistently have these meetings with Russians, don't disclose them, and then they come out drip by drip. So what it essentially means is that as much as Donald Trump tries to put this story behind him, it continues to have new – we continue to have new revelations that keeps this story going. And in most instances, it's related to the Trump and the Trump campaign itself.
And the story repeated another pattern. It stepped on some positive developments that President Trump seems to have brought out of his meeting with Vladimir Putin, a de-escalation plan and an apparent ceasefire in southern Syria. What do we know about the plan and whether this one is likely to hold better than other ceasefire plans have in that war?
Well, this plan appears – Trump tried to make it appear that this kind of came out of the meeting, but clearly this has been negotiated for quite a while, especially because Jordan was evidently a part of this agreement as well. And it's an attempt to de-escalate the conflict in one part of Syria, in southwest Syria, and so far, for the last 24 hours, it appears to be holding. But there have been numerous types of agreements like this in the past, and they have not held. And – in many ways, while it is a positive development in terms of that particular region, it doesn't address the U.S. concerns about President Assad and the fact that President Putin is the person responsible for making sure that President Assad stays in power. So there's still just a long way to go in terms of what the future of Syria looks like, how it's going to be negotiated amongst the parties, and really whether this is a step towards a larger peace process or this is just a particular agreement to deal with a particular region at this time.
A fragile agreement in southern Syria with an uncertain future between President Trump, Vladimir Putin, and other actors around the Syria war. News that got occluded by potential collusion discussions between Trump relatives and Russians. Will Pomerantz, Deputy Director for the Kennan Institute for the Advanced Russian Studies at the Wilson Center. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
A lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.